Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. And I welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to learn about how deep magnet stimulation is shown to improve symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder from the Sheba Medical Center in Israel, and a lot more on health and healing and reversing the aging process. Then we're going to take a look at how powerful is the media in creating the stories behind the scenes, anonymously, feeding that to CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, Fox, and then they purport it to be objective? No. We're also going to have a pediatrician, the top in the state of Michigan, who runs the association, who is testifying under oath about vaccines, something they should be really smart on, right? Not so much. Now, it's important that if you can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook, I want you to look carefully when I play this clip, because you're going to see the former director of the CIA being honest, the former head of news at CBS Network being honest, Frank Church, one of the few really courageous legislators, and this courage to do hearings on the CIA and get him to tell the truth cost him his reelection. But this doctor is being honest too. But she's not going to like how this comes out. Nor should any of you who claim to have absolute knowledge that vaccines are safe and effective when that's never been proven. And she's put to the test. Now, mind you, if she is the top top pediatrician in the state, and for all intents and purposes worked hand in glove with the American Academy of Pediatrics, then she doesn't even know the basics. But I want her to show you what she doesn't know, but she's absolutely sure they're safe and effective. Based upon what evidence? Where's the proof? And then I'll give you my own commentary on this. And also for those of you who were not able to get into the lecture, and I'm sorry, the room was packed on Saturday for the 9/11 discussions, and mine was not about 9/11. My discussion was about why we cannot believe anything the media says unless we first challenge it to show whether or not there's proof that they haven't been biased or just selling us a propaganda piece. But this Wednesday on 9/11, we'll be doing a one-hour special on Progressive Radio Network, an extra half hour on 9/11 with information you're not aware of, brand new information on a scientific basis. I'll have two guests plus myself. So if you didn't have a chance to get there on Saturday, everything I said on Saturday, I'm going to say on Wednesday, except I can talk in a normal voice. Then people in the back of the room were touching their ears and like they can't hear me, because it was, I guess, they just didn't understand what happens when you have a room filled with hundreds and hundreds of people and you have a poor little speaker system. But I still spoke loudly enough and with enough passion, people got the message. And we filmed it all, so you'll be able to see a lot of that. Now, years ago, there was a physician who was using magnets. And he came to see me, and he said at the Tri-State Healing Center he needed some really objective work on magnets. As a single clinician, using magnets on some of his patients, mainly those with depression or insomnia, it would be considered subjective, meaning not really good science. So we had a lot of board-certified physicians and nurses and researchers and acupuncturists and chiropractors. We had a whole team, 17 people working at the Tri-State Healing Center for over 10 years. And we would do studies. We would do studies on with hepatitis, herpes, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, HEV virus. We would take before and during and after blood workups over a year, and then we can say, here was the viral load on day one, here's the viral load on the last day, and then here's a year later follow-up. So we'd have some good objective data, and we shared that with physicians all across the United States. In fact, one doctor in California came and spent 10 days there. He stayed in my apartment. I have an extra bedroom, and he stayed there. And every morning, he'd be there at 8 o'clock in the morning and working with the medical team and then interviewing the patients and to see how they were coming. He went back to California, and he started using the protocols. Not everything. He was not familiar with homeopathy or zeolites. He was not familiar with traditional Chinese medicine, Qigong. He was not familiar with really high-dose vitamin C, but he still used 50,000 milligrams. And he was able to have not a single patient die of Kaposi's sarcoma, pneumocystis, green pneumonia because of that. And so I was very pleased that he came. He learned, he went home, and other physicians were doing the same, except they kept it rather quiet. In any case, one of the people gave us a bunch of magnets, different Gauss, and we tried them. We had people put these magnets when they would go to bed at night at the base of their skull, and then we were only using people who had acute insomnia, sometimes waking up 5-6 times a night and being tired in the morning. And boy, within 3 months, it was clear. The study was showing these people were not waking up once during the night. And people with depression were having remarkable improvements. So that was my own research. There was also a gentleman, his name was Fox. And he came into our office again, and he had this machine. And it was a pulsed magnetic waves. And he would use it on with the doctors on people who had fractures, osteoporosis, thinning of the bones, with remarkable improvements. And he said that down in Texas, they were using it on horses that had shattered their bones, and instead of putting the animal down, they would wrap these magnetic braces around the animal and pulse this in, and it worked. Never knew what happened, where it went from there. Never saw or heard of him again. But indeed, when I was down in West Texas at the Healing Springs Ranch, I was in the quarter horse capital of America. When you drive from, let's say, Denton, Texas, where there's university, about a half hour out of Dallas, northwest, and then I was in Tioga, a little tiny town of 250 people, you would see just one quarter horse ranch after another. And there was a doctor, veterinarian doctor, who was the vet for most of those places, as he was for my animal sanctuary. And he was very familiar with using magnets to help heal bone on horses instead of putting them down. So it's a little background on magnets. In any case, researchers have found that focusing powerful non-invasive magnetic stimulation on a specific brain area can improve the symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder. And this opens the way to treat the large minority of sufferers who do not respond to, let's say, conventional therapy, and want something that's natural, non-toxic. So, and this was on a conference in Copenhagen. And by the way, OCD is broadly defined as recurrent thoughts or urges or excessive repetitive behaviors which an individual feels driven to perform. And around, let's say 12 adults in every 1,000 suffer from this in any given year. That's about 2.3% of the adult population. That's a lot of people suffering, millions of people suffering. So here we have pulsed magnetic therapy able to influence that, and that means you would not have to rely upon the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac or Seroquel or Paxil, which I do not recommend for anyone under any conditions. One thing I do recommend is curcumin. C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. Why? Because it attenuates monosodium urate inflammation associated with gout. And this is from Sichuan Medical College in China. So according to this study, and we know that gouty arthritis is characterized by deposits of monosodium urate within the synovial joints and tissues due to increased uric concentrations, uric acid concentrations. And in the study, they explored the effect of natural compound like curcumin on the crystals and the kind of inflammatory response. And that was very important because on all levels, from the macrophages and the curcumin, they were able to substantially reduce inflammatory responses in gouty arthritis. And that's good. It's inexpensive, easy to use, non-toxic. But it helps dozens of different medical conditions. So if you have gout, if you have ankle swelling or synovial space problems, you may want to consider that. From Columbia University School of Public Health, high blood pressure treatment may slow cognitive decline. What do I mean? High blood pressure appears to accelerate cognitive decline among middle-aged as well as older adults. But treating high blood pressure can slow this down, according to a preliminary study presented by researchers at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health at the American Heart Association's Hypertension Scientific Symposium sessions. Now, why is this important? Because I'm seeing so many people today who have cognitive decline, including in my own friends. In fact, just one of my friends and I saw a documentary the other night on the life. Well, I didn't consider it a complete documentary, and as a filmmaker, I would have done it differently, but Linda Ronstadt, it was her life, at least it was her life through the 1970s, and all the people who work with her and the uniqueness of her voice. Now, I wasn't a fan. It's not the kind of music I like. It, you know, there are people who bought so many albums that she had the only performer in history to have five consecutive multi-platinum albums. That means a lot of albums sold. A few of her songs I certainly remember from that time, but I was more interested in the Detroit sound. Detroit, that's where all of the wonderful soul music originated, but then you had different music in Nashville. You had the country western, which I was not a fan of. I grew up with that. That's all we could hear on our radio station in West Virginia. And down in New Orleans, you had that old jazz. And on the West Coast, you had a lot of pop stars. So depending upon where you live and what you were exposed to and your own taste, what you enjoyed. But a lot of people liked her music. In any case, before the film, my friend and I had a conversation. After the film, my friend asked me a question, and I said, we just had this conversation. He said, no. I said, yes. Yesterday, I got a call from someone and said, I just got this memo. What is this memo about? I said, we had this conversation on Friday. He said, what? I said, yes. We had a detailed conversation on this very topic on Friday. He says, I don't remember, Gary. That's frequently a red flag for dementia, early dementia. Now, can it be reversed? Yes, I've done that. In fact, I'm going to have someone on in the next week or two that will be examples of advanced dementia reversed. Very advanced autism completely reversed to the person is totally normal. So we have an epidemic of let's say, early and mid problems with cognition, and that leads frequently to Alzheimer's. So lower your blood pressure. Lower it naturally. Garlic, onions, shallot, black garlic in particular, twice a day. Vitamin C, quercetin, the B complex, B12 in particular. Lots of ways to lower that and then protect yourself with L-carnitine and coenzyme Q10, and suddenly you not only have a lower blood pressure and lower your sodium intake, but you also have protected your brain, because there's a definite relationship between brain health and high blood pressure. And just remember, you have to understand how elevated blood pressure affects the blood's the blood vessels in the brain. And it will impact your memory and language and even thinking skills. Also from Oregon State University comes a study about fatty foods necessary for vitamin E absorption. A fresh look at how the best way of getting your vitamin E into the body, if you're using strictly a diet, which I do not believe is feasible, is you have to have more of the fats because it's fat soluble and makes it easier to absorb. However, if you take the vitamin E already in a fat substrate or in its own medium, then you get maximum absorption without the extra calories coming from eating fatty foods. So there's a natural way to get your vitamin E in there at that very important micronutrient. And you need vitamin E for a healthier heart, to thin the blood, to help prevent strokes, to help heal the arteries. For the brain, it's really good. This article was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And also, people think of vitamin E as alpha tocopherol. No, you have mixed tocopherols. There are four other tocopherols, and four tocotrienols taken together are good for you. And most people take somewhere around 60 to 90 milligrams of vitamin C a day, and that's terrible. I believe that we should be taking about 400 to 800 units of vitamin E, mixed tocopherols, and between 1 to 5,000 milligrams minimally of buffered vitamin C throughout the day. They're both best taken together. They also trap free radicals. From Daegu University in South Korea, researchers find acupuncture reduces alcohol withdrawal symptoms in this laboratory study. So if you know someone who's had trouble with alcohol consumption, get them on, well, I'm not going to give the nutrition protocol now, but acupuncture makes a big difference and helps them withdraw without all the adverse effects when you're coming off alcohol. That's the bottom line to this particular study. Also, your mouthwash can cancel out key benefits of exercise. This is from University of Plymouth, which is in the United Kingdom. Let me explain this, because it's not all mouthwashes. But your mouthwash could have a bizarre effect on how exercise affects your body. A new study just this week found that swigging mouthwash can prevent exercise from lowering blood pressure as it normally does. And strange as that sounds, the results highlight just how important the bacteria living in our mouths really are to us. According to the author of the study, who's a nutritional physiologist based at the University of Plymouth, his team wasn't really interested in studying mouthwash's effect on exercise by itself. It's long been known that exercise opens up and dilates our blood vessels, in part by getting our bodies to produce more nitric oxide, which is a good thing. But even after we are done jogging and power walking, we stop producing excess nitric oxide. Our circulation is still affected, with our blood pressure remaining lower than it was for hours, a phenomenon known as post-exercise hypotension. There are various theories for why this happens, but no one's completely figured it out. But I believe it has to do with the alcohol in mouthwashes. Now, yes, that alcohol would temporarily destroy all the bacteria in your mouth, good and bad. But they did not do this study on non-alcohol, more natural mouthwashes. So if you've destroyed all the bacteria in your mouth and you've created a highly acidic medium with the alcohol in your mouth and you've just finished exercising, I believe that is the missing link in their study. Also, why we should ditch sugar in favor of raw honey. And there are various types of honey. Manuka honey is a big one, but there are other natural honeys. And this is information from Green Med Info, Sarah G. So while honey and sugar share similar degrees of sweetness. And by the way, if you really want a really good sugar, stevia. And stevia now comes, it's a zero calories, and it has medicinal benefit. If you take too much, you get a little loose stools, but if you take just normally what is a little tiny pack, it'll sweeten anything. It's about 500 times sweeter than regular sugar. So that would be the ideal for people who want something sweet but don't want the calories and all the negative consequences of eating sugar. But the differences in the way our bodies respond to them are profound. So for someone who met me in the park yesterday, who was riding a bike and stopped to make some sarcastic comment, "Well, honey and sugar is the same." And I said, "And why do you believe that?" "Well, because I know." "You know? Are you sure about what you know?" "Yeah." "Okay." To whoever that anonymous person was, let me explain this. Technically, honey and sugar, which is sucrose, both exist because they're food for their respective species. In the case of sugarcane, a member of the grass family, Poaceae, which includes wheat and maize and rice, sucrose provides energy for its leaves and is an easily transportable source of energy for other parts of the plant, such as the root, that do not produce their own energy. Honey, of course, is produced by bees from the nectar of flowers solely for the purpose of food, mainly for the queen bee and the other bees. And beyond this obvious similarity, because honey is regurgitation, it's rich in enzymes, it's rich in natural plant hormones. The differences between honey and sugar, however, are much more profound. First, honey is a whole food. Sucrose is not. In other words, sucrose is an isolate, technically only one chemical compound, lifted from a background of hundreds of other components within the whole plant, whereas honey is composed of an equally complex array of compounds, many of which are well known, including macronutrients, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, prebiotics, etc. Others whose role is still completely a mystery. Now, when I want to know for myself, how is honey produced, and what about turbinado sugar or other forms of sugar, and one time they had in England when I was over there, I asked them, "Do you have natural honey?" And they said, "Well, we don't have the honey, but we have something equally as good. We have what is called the dark sugar." So they brought me out a little tiny, look like a brick, and you would cut off little pieces and put it in whatever you were using it with. And so I took a little piece and I tasted it. I said, this is not natural. "Oh, yes, it's all natural." Well, it wasn't. I wanted to find out. So I flew down to Jamaica, then to Barbados, and then to Trinidad to see for myself. I went to the sugar cane fields. I was in the fields. I would take a piece of sugar cane and cut it and just see how much sweetness was there. Now, it was slightly sweet, but not terribly sweet. I also noticed when speaking with the sugar cane workers that almost all of them had rotted teeth and gum infections because all day long they're using that as a way of getting some energy because they're out in the hot sun and it's hard work. Once the sugar cane is cut, it's taken into a factory, completely non-hygienic factory. And they put the sugar cane, unwashed, into this grinding machine with gigantic steel claws. And so it rips apart the hard exterior fibers, and then that's removed. And then it's a brown mash. Much like a pomace that you would make if you were, let's say, grinding up apples to make apple cider, which I also used to do. And in fact, if any of you ever heard of Fairway Supermarkets, one of the original owners was a close friend of mine. And he and I together were going to buy a farm. We ended up buying a farm upstate in Goshen to grow produce organically when no store in New York was selling organic produce. Most people are not aware of this. I never talk about these things. They just come into my mind extemporaneously. But when I had my little tiny hole-in-the-wall health food store called Creative Health Foods, which, by the way, is still there. It's the oldest health food store I'm aware of in the United States, or at least on the East Coast. 52 years it's been there. And you couldn't get any organic produce anywhere. When we finally did get once-a-week delivery, I looked and it said organic, but I didn't know to trust the man or not because he couldn't answer my questions. So found out he was down in Philadelphia, and we tracked him down, and sure enough, he would go to a regular market, buy regular produce, stick it in a bag, and call it organic, and he ripped us off. So I contacted a customer at the time in the store named Danny Grossman, and Danny was one of the lawyers for the Department of Consumer Affairs that Bess Meyerson had. So we got him and her to hold hearings, public hearings, where I said if someone cannot certify the organics produce, it's not, and you're just being ripped off and passing that, unfortunately, on to your customers. So that brought kind of like a standstill to any organic produce. And that's when I decided, let's see if we can't bring some down. So at the Fertiller Farm, which thousands of you attended and learned how to do organic farming, and your kids learned how to love animals and look at them as a friendly sentient being instead of a meal. And that's when the first organic produce came in. But later from Goshen, I bought a bankrupt farm and 200 acres and turned it into the largest organic producing farm in the eastern United States. It used to be a truck that would come and take the food from Boston clear down to Washington, D.C. But the interesting part with Dave was that people love the apple cider. There's some photographs of me making the apple cider in a barn. I'd go around all the orchards and that were not spraying, and I'd say, can I take your dropped apples? And they'd say, sure, happy, take them all you want, because they just collect worms. And so I'd collect hundreds of pounds of apples. I'd take them into a barn and wash them off, clean them up, and then I built this special press. There was nothing around to do it with, so I got some hardwood. Your hardwoods are like locust, ironwood, really hardwood that will take a beating. And you make little slats, and then like had nine slats, and then a hydraulic pump that you put your foot in. As you press this, a big steel plate comes down and really squishes out all the juice from this grind up apples. You wash the apples and you put them into a little grinding machine, and then you get this pumice out. And there was a whole family of deer that would come once a week. I would do it on Saturdays. Neil Kramer and I was up there doing this, put on the blue bib overhauls, and as we would finish pressing the juice, and the juice would come out into a 55-gallon stainless steel drum, we would then made a hole in the bottom of it and put a little screw attachment and a lever, and we could then fill gallons of apple juice, slap on a label, take it in town. All the while, those deer were eating all of that backup mesh from the apples. And then I tried it with pears, tried it with peaches, and all of it worked. In any case, Fairway would take them, and they would just double the price, and cheap as can be. I wanted to see would it work, and people loved it. But the organic produce, nobody would buy. So you offered the organic produce at half of regular produce. The commercial, sprayed, adulterated with chemicals, they would rather have that than clean, healthy, locally grown organic produce. This went on for about a year until finally Dave says, Gary, this isn't working. The public's not ready for this. He was right. Remember I said you got to have the right idea, which we had, organic produce for all the health food stores and supermarkets that wanted it. At the right price, we had that, cheaper by 50% than regular produce. At the right time, it wasn't the right time. So any one factor of these five, right time, right place, right idea, right support system, be the right person, it won't work. So that taught me an important lesson in life. Because I'd later think, why? Why don't people want something that's organic and healthy at half the price of their regular stuff? They're saving money and getting healthier. It was the wrong time. They were not fully educated on it. And hence all the effort to educate people about organic. That's how organic got into New York City. In any case, I digress. The whole idea was that I brought in all the beehives and would collect pollen and bee propolis, but I would give all the honey back to the bees so that every day of the year they had not just what they could forage, but also in the wintertime in particular, they survive and thrive because they have plenty of their own raw organic honey. Unfortunately, people don't do that. I still do that to this day. I've been working with bees my entire adult life. Anyhow, that's what the difference is. And when I was in Jamaica and I saw that they were stripping off all the nutrients and then they bleached it, I said, what are you doing this for? Here's what he said. He said, we can't send a dark sugar to the United States because nobody wants to buy it. They want white sugar. So we stir back in certain amount of molasses to give them the turbinado or the brick, and the heavy ones go to England and France, and they're the brick sugar. They're just white sugar with molasses stirred back in. So I was right when I talked about the place wanting to sell me something they thought, I'm sure, was natural, and it's not. So to conclude this, your processed white sugars are poison. Your raw organic honeys are extremely healthy. And just make sure that you pay attention to the brand you're buying. Better to buy a quality brand that you can check to make sure that if it's olive oil, it's real olive oil, because probably 80% coming in the United States is not. And it's other oils blended so that the mobs running that business, and a lot of it is mob run, you're not being ripped off. Honey the same way. I would never buy the honey you find in your regular supermarkets. I would look for a quality honey that I could check to see that it's good. Just something to think about. And finally, the question is, do you know which herbal plants are good for the flu? Well, there's a scientific review that provides the answers. This is not me saying, this is Ohio State University. And by the way, you've heard me say this, I'll say it again to emphasize. Our human reality always precedes scientific validation. But if you're very anal, and if you're very monotheistic in your thinking, then you will wait until some doctor or some scientist says, now you can do something because we have the proof that it works. So just think of the arrogance. Think of the conceit of those who believe that reality doesn't exist until they deem it real. But before the dawn of pharmaceuticals, people relied upon medicinal plants to relieve symptoms of various ailments and improve overall health. Today, herbal medicines are on the rise once again because they work. And with their powerful chemical components becoming the focus of interest for many scientific studies. And besides being effective, these naturally occurring compounds cause very few adverse effects. So herbal medicine is a legitimate healing art. There are antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral, anti-tumor agents in them. So there's an article published in the peer-reviewed Journal of American Journal of Chinese Medicine, and researchers from Ohio State University systematically reviewed several herbal extracts. According to studies, they exhibit antiviral activity against the influenza virus, the flu virus, which changes yearly. And they concluded that these natural medicines have the potential to be developed into modern antiviral agents that can stop the spread of this rapidly mutating virus more effectively than conventional medications. That's good. That's just one study out of many that shows that you can take natural things and resist the impact of the viruses. And you're looking at things such as astragalus, echinacea, and garlic as just three simple examples. But there are hundreds that are available, and at least a dozen that are at the top of my list, curcumin being up there from turmeric, which is also phenomenally important. And bee propolis being one of the most powerful of them all, and wild oregano oil. So these are all natural and non-toxic. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Knoll. broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Now, go to your, type in on your computer, Progressive Radio Network, Facebook, because you're one going to see, when we come out of a commercial, we're going directly to the head of the CIA and the head of CBS News, acknowledging the enormous influence they have over our American media. And that was in the 1970s. And they can pick up a phone and control a movie script and what influence it's going to have on the person watching the film. They can control what scenes are deleted and what scenes are acceptable. And in return, they help with getting permission and using military facilities and equipment. But what about when it comes to 5G? What if they're telling us lies? What about Wi-Fi? What if they're telling us lies to protect the industries? What about vaccines when they're telling us lies? Do you think it's by accident that New York Times, the Washington Post, have become vehemently and intellectually violent in denouncing anyone who uses a vaccine and then finds it didn't work or harm someone, and then decides it's my body, my right, I'm not going to allow another vaccine when I've had two vaccine-damaged children, I'm not going to allow the third. And suddenly, that person is considered an enemy of the state, a danger to everyone who's been vaccinated. Well, hold on a second. If the vaccine is supposed to protect you, then how is it that an unvaccinated person becomes a danger to those people who are vaccinated? Everything about the vaccine discussion has been politicized. You're going to see two things, both related, including the top pediatrician in Michigan when she was finally asked questions about the vaccines that she injects with certainty into a person's body. She is merely, I selected this clip that you've never seen to show you what happens with almost every pediatrician in America. Back in a moment.
Stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now we're looking at that very carefully.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
At CBS, we had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole news and public affairs operation in 1954, ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
We have quite a lot of detailed information, and we will evaluate it, and we will include any evidence of wrongdoing or any evidence of impropriety in our final report and make recommendations.
do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the National News Services, AP and UPI?
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Okay, yes. Now, keep this in mind. Last year, the CIA, along with the National Security Agency and the Pentagon, spent a minimum of $500 million influencing news outlets around the world. Could be double that. And they write stories. Thousands of people are working, as we speak, writing stories. Thousands of people are monitoring radio shows, television programs, articles, to see if they're saying anything that could cause embarrassment to any agency of the government or any major corporation or any association that they have, like with Lockheed Martin and Boeing and their contracts, military contracts. So you think the information you get has not been filtered, that there's not been a journalist engaged in self-censorship or ideological censorship. Look at everything that's happened. The deep state has finally showed its hand in a coup for the last 2.5 years when they tried to get Hillary Clinton elected by not indicting her for crimes that she committed, multiple laws that she broke, and also then wanting Trump to be a Russian agent. And everything, every day on MSNBC and Rachel Maddow and these other programs, none of them were held accountable for all their errors and their misinformation. In point of fact, Russia did not hack the Democratic National Committee computers and get the information to Julian Assange. That was done by a man named Mark Rich inside of the Democratic National Committee. He turned that information over to a former ambassador from Great Britain in the park across American University, both a thumb drive and actual documents. He managed to get those into Julian Assange's hand. And all the experts we've spoken with and all the people who've been interviewed on this, such as Ray McGovern and William Benny, the man who created these intelligence gathering capabilities at the National Security Agency, they said it was virtually impossible for Russia to have gotten those emails through the through the Democratic National Committee. But they kept emphasizing this. Also, take a look at the work, and I will be doing this on Wednesday. Who was the head of the FBI at 9/11? Who? Well, of course. Now suddenly the liberal community goes to supporting him as if he's a modern-day truth-sayer and the torchbearer for ethics, Mueller. And who kept the FBI from investigating the Saudi relationship with the terrorists? Mueller. He is the best defender of the deep state, as the current Attorney General Barr is. So these people control the media, completely control it. And so don't believe anything ever unless you can independently verify it. Now we're going to go to the pediatrician, the very person who is looked upon as an example of scientific literacy and scholarship, especially when you're telling a woman that it's not your body when it comes to vaccines or your child's. It's ours. She then becomes an extended agent of the state. And the pharmaceutical industry controls the state. So in effect, by caveat, your body belongs to Big Pharma. And if you doubt me, then see what it's like when you have a child that is told they have cancer, needs chemotherapy, and you decide on another approach. See how quickly the services come in, Child Protective Services, to take away your child and forcibly give them chemotherapy, and then charge you as being an unfit parent, actually abusive parent, for wanting your child to have some other therapy. Or just say that you've been diagnosed with some form of psychiatric disorder. Now try to prove that you don't have that and see what happens when you're in the state control. It's barbaric. And yet, this is how far it goes. This is why I want you to watch this clip.
Yes.
Means this poor child will have to be tortured with six different injections at the same time. And if you would like to put those six up at the one visit, at her first visit to get all these immunizations, I'm happy to do that.
A child at their six-month shot, they would receive DTaP, correct?
Correct.
They would receive polio?
Correct.
Hep B?
Correct.
Pneumococcal?
Yes.
Hib?
It depends. It depends on the product that was used in the first two sessions.
Same issue with catching up a two-and-a-half-year-old, right? Same choice.
Same choice. Yeah, in this case, yes.
At 2.5 years of age, you're saying getting six vaccines is torture, but a 6 month old would have to receive, we just counted, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vaccines, correct? Aluminum adjuvants are using vaccines, correct?
Correct.
Why are the aluminum adjuvants using vaccines?
Because they make the vaccine more effective.
Okay. And how do they do that?
I don't know.
Okay. What's an antigen?
An antigen is typically a protein that, in this case, it would be, if you're talking about vaccines, an antigen is a protein that causes a reaction and oftentimes is an infectious agent, but not always.
Isn't it true that an adjuvant will not only bind to the target antigen that's in the vaccine, but also to the impurities and byproducts such as the animal and human parts left in the vaccine or the manufacturing process?
You're asking me specifics about physiology that I am not, that's not my area of expertise.
But so you're not aware that there's a difference between the form that aluminum, so when it's ingested, it's taken up an ionic form, when it's injected, it's in these nanoparticle forms. And in contrast, injected aluminum are nanoparticles, correct? They're there to create an irritant to the immune system so that the vaccine creates antibodies. And so they're actually these nanoparticles that are in the vaccine, right? Or do you not know?
You're talking about specifics that are very detailed.
Aren't the details important? I mean, you said that...
Not in this case, because we're talking about a metal. It is not concerning to me because the amount of aluminum that we ingest in general, just through our diet, is much higher than what we get through vaccines. There is no reason to believe that amount, that additional small amount, is anything to be concerned about.
So you said that the quantity of ingested aluminum is small, is much larger than the amount of injected aluminum, and therefore you deem it safe.
Correct.
Are you aware that this FDA provides that in terms of ingested aluminum, eaten aluminum, 0.3% or less is actually taken up by the blood? Do you know that or not?
I don't know the exact numbers. No.
And that if it is, it's taken up in ionic form. You understand what I mean?
I understand what you mean by that.
That means in its smallest elemental form, that's how it's taken into the blood, right?
Correct.
Okay. And aluminum in ionic form is not able to cross the blood-brain barrier, correct?
I am not aware that that's true.
You don't know?
I don't know that that's true.
Okay. If you don't know, that's fine. And antigens bound to aluminum are taken up by macrophages, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And macrophages present the stuff they gobble up to the parts of the immune system that create antibodies, correct?
I believe so. I don't. I have not studied the actual mechanism of action.
And they also travel to different parts of the body, including the brain, correct?
Correct.
And they'll deposit the materials they gobble up there. Isn't it true that most package inserts for most vaccines report encephalitis or encephalopathy as a reported adverse event from vaccination?
I would have to look at all the package inserts to be able to say yes or no to that. It is possible, yes.
Do any of the vaccines in the childhood study contain monkey kidney cells?
I do not know.
Blood serum from cows?
I do not know.
Guinea pig cell cultures?
I do not know.
Gelatin from pigs and cows?
I don't know.
MRC5 human diploid cells?
MRC5 human diploid subject. Those are specifics that I typically do
not. Are you aware that MRC5 diploid cells are cells cultured from the lung tissue in an aborted fetus?
I am aware that there are two vaccines out on the market, the MMR and the VZV, that have, that use a cell in the production of it, use a cell line from aborted fetuses from 1962 and 1966. Those are the only two aborted fetus tissue cell lines that are used.
Isn't it true that there actually has recently been a new cell line, human cell line from aborted fetal tissue that's been approved for use in vaccines?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. And none of the aborted fetal tissue culture cell lines actually end up in the vaccine product?
The vaccine doesn't have cells in it.
The cellular pieces from the aborted fetal
tissue. That is potentially possible, yes.
Okay. Isn't it true that, in fact, there is more of that cellular debris in the MMR, for example, than there is actually antigen?
I don't know.
Okay. Isn't it true that that the Havrix hepatitis A vaccine, the hepatitis A vaccine contains millions of fragments of human DNA?
Possible? I don't know.
Isn't it true that Varivax, the chickenpox vaccine, contains approximately 1 trillion fragments of human DNA?
Again, if Dr. Plotkin says it does, then I will agree.
Isn't it true these 74 aborted fetuses had almost every piece of their bodies, including skin, tongue, and heart, cut into little cubes to be used for culture?
I'm not aware of any studies that Dr. Plotkin, the specifics of any studies that Dr. Plotkin did.
What principles and methods did you rely upon in reaching your opinion regarding vaccine safety?
I use the recommendations of the CDC and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and the American Academy of Pediatrics to form an opinion about the vaccine safety.
So your basis, the principal methods that you relied upon of reaching your opinion regarding vaccine safety and vaccine efficacy are what the CDC recommends and your claim that you've seen some people die of some diseases that for which there are vaccinations. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's the sum total, right?
And the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations.
Okay.
So when you're looking at a patient and making the determination as to what vaccines they should receive, what family history factors are concerning to you?
One of the big family history factors that I would take into consideration is there a history of anybody who's immune suppressed?
Isn't it true that the only polio vaccine used in the United States is an activated polio vaccine, which is injected in muscle?
It's an inactivated poliovirus vaccine.
Right, and it's injected in muscle tissue.
Correct.
Okay. Wow. I would be willing to bet that the average American mother who's had a vaccine-injured child knows far more than what that woman knows. She was inaccurate on almost all of her statements. She clearly doesn't know what an antigen is, and it's not just a protein compound. Anything that stimulates a reaction in the body to its immune system, it could be a virus, a parasite. My God, everything, I could deconstruct every sentence she said. Thank goodness there was an intelligent person who had done their homework. The average American woman, once victimized, does their homework and comes to the realization that the science was official science. When she relied upon the CDC, this is the same CDC that is institutionally racist. They were willing for 40 years to allow African Americans to not be cured of their syphilis, instead spread it to see what would happen to them until it got to the tertiary stage and they died. And then Bill Clinton later apologized for that. But everyone there knew they were doing this experiment. Now, as of 2003 and 2004, they had information from their own internal scientists, including a Dr. William Thompson, and we have it in his own words because he was recorded by a man I just spoke to over the weekend, Dr. Brian Hooker, a professor and chairman of the Department in Sciences out at a California university, where it could have confirmed Andrew Wakefield's research group in Great Britain that they were on to something when they found that the MMR vaccine was causing problems in 12 children who had bowel disease. These were generally gastroenterologists, including the most famous gastroenterologists in Europe. And they published in The Lancet. Thompson said that he felt terrible that he could have confirmed the truth of that research, and instead they hid it. Why? Because they were told to from up above. Remember, the CDC is a military institution, not a civilian one. You have ranks, you're responsible, you can't just to the commanders. And so they got everyone together with black garbage bags, took all the studies showing that African-American boys 36 months and younger would have up to a 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder. They couldn't get that information out, couldn't allow it to go out, so they hid it. Now, the Justice Department should have been all over that. That is a crime against humanity. Every African-American church in America should have been protesting and doing demonstrations against the CDC and telling their legislators. The Black Caucus should have done this. Well, very few have done anything. And only one man named Posey from Florida has asked for hearings to bring these people forward under oath, and the CDC has refused, and no one in Congress is willing to back Posey on this. And that's where she gets her information. And from a organization like the American Academy of Pediatrics that gets its money from the very pharmaceutical companies that it's then going to challenge? No. So, and when was the last time you went to a pharmacist to get an inoculation? And they ask about your medical history, detailed medical history. There are at least 30 different conditions that would mean you should not be vaccinated. They don't ask you for any. But that is the level of their credibility. And why can't the New York Times do a report on that instead of attacking people who become educated because they become victims? Just remember, the American society needs to know how utterly in contempt of ethics the New York Times, Washington Post, the entirety of American media is. These were just a few random examples of that today. We're out of time, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I thank you very much for listening and watching. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.